Jesus' mighty power to heal. It's not limited by distance or time. Jesus didn't need to be physically present to heal that official's son. And he doesn't need to be physically present in his resurrection body right here on earth to heal people today, does it? He does it by his mighty power from the throne room of heaven, doesn't he?
Wonder Lake Bible Church.
Building mature followers of Jesus Christ.
Well, folks, I want you to know that today is a message of hope. A message of hope. But before we get to that, I think we need to first be reminded of our need for hope. Because the fact is that we live in a broken world. We live in a broken world. And we see this brokenness evidenced in such things as natural disasters, in human evil, in sickness, disease, in pain, physical, emotional, in despair, and of course, supremely, then in death. You know, there are natural disasters, hurricanes, typhoons, tornadoes, earthquakes, wildfires. You know, interesting, as I wrote this before, I had no idea I would be saying this when we had a threat of a tornado right in our area. But here's the reminder, right, folks? We live in a broken world. All kinds of natural disasters. The Philippine typhoon that we've seen in the news here recently, about 3,600 people killed, and countless more, though, that are subjected to these utterly miserable conditions. Natural disasters. And then there is the disaster of the human heart, human evil. We see it in crime, in terrorism, in war. You know, there's one source that claims that, how many wars do you think that there have been in recorded human history? Anyone want to take a guess? 14,500 is an approximation. It's estimated then that there have been between 3,500 BC and the late 20th century, there have been about 14,500 wars that have taken 3.5 billion lives. And in that entire time, there have only been 300 years of peace, a relative peace, if you will. So for 92% of the time since 3,500 BC, there's been a war going on somewhere on the planet. And of course, the most destructive war in history was World War II. It's estimated between 60 and 85 million people were killed in that war alone, with many, many millions more, though, wounded physically, emotionally, and spiritually. There's natural disasters. There is human evil. There is sickness and pain and despair. You know, right now we're seeing an upheaval in our healthcare delivery system. But what it's reminding us, though, is why we need healthcare in the first place. And that is because our fragile bodies can be so easily wounded or become sick. Right now, there are hundreds of millions of people in the world who are living with chronic pain and disease and varying afflictions. There's also the trauma of despair, the psychological trauma of living with broken spirits in broken bodies in a broken world, surrounded by billions of broken people. I want to ask you, do you think that there are broken, despairing people right here in Wonder Lake? There sure are. You know, one of the privileges I have had for about the last 4 years or so now is working with the Wonder Lake Fire Department Rescue Squad. And so I hear all of the calls that come in and say, you might be surprised, folks, the things that are going on in this community all the time right around you. But you know, one time I noticed something, it seemed there was a particular type of call that we would get. And it seemed like, boy, there's a lot of those. And I actually started keeping track to see how often is this. And I said, wow, it really is very frequent. And these are the calls that I would call suicide-related calls here in Wonder Lake. A suicide-related call, it's where the rescue squad is called because a person is suicidal, or because someone has actually attempted suicide, or because someone has successfully committed suicide. Did you know that there is, right here in Wonder Lake, a suicide-related call about once every 10 days? Once every 10 days, a suicide-related call here in Wonder Lake, with about 4 suicides in Wonder Lake every year. And it's men, it's women, it's young people, it's old people. One time it was even a child. Natural disasters, human evil, sickness, pain, despair, and death. And death. Does anyone want to guess what the death rate for human beings is? What percentage of human beings die? 100%, right? Now, someone out there, a Bible scholar, is going to say, oh, no. What about Enoch and Elijah? I know. Okay, we'll just put them aside for a moment. Other than Enoch and Elijah, what percentage of human beings have died? 100%, right? The fact is, the knowledge of this is a crushing burden, isn't it? Now, when you're a teenager, you're immortal. You think you're going to live forever, don't you? I thought I was. You know, I've noticed a little something, that the older you get, the more cognizant or aware you become of your mortality, don't you? And the significance then of that. And I wonder then, how do people do it? How do people who do not have the hope of Jesus Christ do it? How do they get through life with no hope, knowing that death is coming? But what about you? Are you feeling broken this morning? We live in a broken world. Are you feeling that brokenness? Do you need some hope? Do you need healing? Is there any hope? Is there any hope for you? Is there any hope for me in the midst of a broken world? Any hope at all? I think we know the answer to that. Yes, there is. There is hope. That hope is found in Jesus Christ, in the healing that is found in Jesus Christ. Today we're going to look at two instances, two of those signs, the healing signs of Jesus. That Jesus' mighty power to heal is unlimited. It's unlimited. And specifically today, it's not limited by distance. It doesn't matter how far we are physically from Jesus. And it's not limited by time. It doesn't matter how long you've struggled with your affliction. Jesus can heal. So yes, there's hope. There's hope for our world. There's hope for you, because we know a mighty and risen Savior. There's someone here today that needs healing. It may be physical. It may be emotional. It may be spiritual. Someone here, maybe, that feels like they are facing overwhelming odds or seemingly impossible circumstances. Well, we want to pray for you today. We want to pray for you today, and we want to entrust you into the hands of our almighty, sovereign, healing Savior. And we're going to be doing that at the conclusion of the message today. Now, I'll say a little bit more when we come to that, but I want you to know, I'm not one of those preachers who thinks that, you know, if you just have enough faith, God will heal you right here, right now, physically. Now, how many of you do believe that we are totally healed in Jesus Christ? How many of you do believe that? You should, because we are, aren't we? But we don't always see that healing physically here and now, right? But there's some out there who just say, well, you know, if you just have enough faith, you will. And you know what? They're false teachers. Faith is important. How many believe God does heal here and now? Absolutely. How many do believe that God calls us to have faith and trust Him, to pray in faith? Absolutely. But does that mean that we can then dictate to the sovereign God what He must do always? Absolutely not. And God does not always heal here and now. But if you are in Jesus Christ, you are supremely healed, aren't you? Absolutely. Let's look at John chapter 4. John chapter 4, verses 46 through 54. So He, Jesus, came again to Cana in Galilee, where he had made the water wine. And at Capernaum there was an official whose son was ill. And when this man heard that Jesus had come from Judea to Galilee, he went to him and asked him to come down and heal his son, for he was at the point of death. And so Jesus said to him, "Unless you see signs and wonders, you will not believe." And the official said to him, "Sir, come down before my child dies." And Jesus said to him, "Go, your son will live." And the man believed the word that Jesus spoke to him and went on his way. And as he was going down, his servants met him and told him that his son was recovering. And so he asked them the hour when he began to get better. And they said to him, "Yesterday at the seventh hour, the fever left him." The father knew that was the hour when Jesus had said to him, "Your son will live." And he himself believed, and all his household. This was now the second sign that Jesus did when he had come from Judea to Galilee. There's that key word sign again. You know, that's one of the key words in the Gospel of John, the word sign. John does not use the word. They're miracles Jesus performed. But he doesn't use the word miracle. He uses sign, calls them signs. Why? Because a sign is indicating something. It's pointing to something. It's giving us information. It's telling us something. And so these miracles of Jesus were mighty displays of his power that are telling us something. They're telling us something about Jesus, who Jesus is. Telling us something about his mission, why he has come. Telling us something about what he can do and will do. So Jesus came to save us from our sins, didn't he? Yes. But he came to save us in every way. In every way. To deliver us from the way, from the ravages of sin. And so these signs in the Gospel of John point up that he is God, that he is the Messiah, that he is the Savior. So we saw then that first one. It says he returned to Cana of Galilee. Now maybe you know the first recorded miracle or sign of Jesus was in Cana of Galilee. Well, what happened there? What was the miracle there? When Jesus turned the water into wine, right? Well, what was the sign in that? Well, I think that there's significance. It wasn't just a magic trick to say, "Hey, look what I can do." And it wasn't even Jesus just helping out his mother who was concerned about these friends, that they were going to be embarrassed because they ran out of wine. But Jesus was telling something to the people about himself through that, wasn't he? What he was saying is, he has come to transform the water of the law into the wine of the gospel. The good news. Jesus enriches life with the gospel. And Jesus then too, he was quickly gaining a reputation as a powerful healer. Now, if you were living then and you heard about this man, this Jesus of Nazareth, and going around and he was performing all these miracles of healing, would you want to go see him? A lot of people were coming to him. So here is this man who lived in the town of Capernaum. So he was an official. We don't know exactly, some kind of official, a governing official of some kind. We're not sure if he was Jewish or Gentile, we don't know. But here is this man, his official. And he's an official, and his son is ill. His son is ill. In fact, the text says what? He's even ill to the point of death. You know, folks, I think about that. I have never had the privilege of being a parent, a biological parent. But as I think about that and kind of enter into this text, I've got to think, and I think some of you parents are probably going to back me up on this one. Is there anything more painful or distressing than the death of a child? I don't think so. So here is this man with this need. He's heard about Jesus. His son is sick. He's in danger of death. He believes Jesus can heal him. You can imagine his despair. And yet, though, the hope that must have been in them, though, too, to go see Jesus. And in his mind, he thinks, what? I need to go get him. And I need to bring him home so he can see my son, so he can put his hand on him and heal him. So he starts out eagerly. He was eager to have Jesus come to his home and heal his son before his son died. But Jesus has this odd habit sometimes of responding to people in a strange way, doesn't he? You know, I know there are some folks that like to be very diplomatic and finesse things and try to be kind to people all the time. I can relate to that a little bit. Don't like sometimes to say things harshly, but then there are others that don't have a problem being as direct. And you know what? We're all needed in the body of Christ, aren't we? Because I'm looking at someone I appreciate a lot for his directness. But Jesus had this habit of sometimes, if he was very, was always, I was about to say he was always kind. That's not true. In an ultimate sense, he was always kind. But sometimes he would say things a little jarring, wouldn't he? And why did he do that? Why wasn't he always gentle and sweet? Sometimes he'd say things a little jarring. Wants to get people to think, doesn't he? Wants to get people to think, and he wants to invite a response from within that person, sometimes then by how he expresses himself. So here's this man in a desperate situation. His son is ill to the point of death. He knows Jesus can help. He wants Jesus to come. Come, Jesus. And we think Jesus would say, have no fear. Have no fear. I'll heal him. But no, he doesn't say that. What does he say to him? He says what? Unless you people see signs and wonders, you will not believe. Well, that's a little jarring, isn't it? I mean, can you be in a more desperate situation? His son is about to die, and Jesus says, if you people don't see signs and wonders, you just won't believe. It's actually the kindness of Jesus that leads him to say that, isn't it? He knows he's going to heal this man's son physically, but he knows that there's a healing that's more important than any physical healing, and what is that? The spiritual healing of salvation, right? And he wants the man to know that. And in fact, by the conclusion of the story, we see that very thing, don't we? So the man persists. Please, please, please come before my child dies. But Jesus knew that he didn't need to go to that man's house to heal the son. Because the fact is, Jesus can unleash his power from afar. Distance is not a problem. Geographical distance is not a problem for him. So he simply says to the man, go, your son will live. And the text indicates that the man believed the word that Jesus spoke to him, and he went on his way. You know, of all the instances of healing, of the miracles of Jesus, there are some in which Jesus required faith of that person, and that person was healed. There are some instances where faith was not required at all. Jesus just did it, didn't he? There were some instances in which that person believed or came to belief as saving faith. There were some instances when there is not an indication that that person came to a saving faith. God is sovereign over these things. He can heal as he wills. In this case, the man believed Jesus. He believed he would heal his son. Now, can you imagine the excitement of this man's heart as he's going home? He believed Jesus, but boy, he really was eager to see it for himself, though, wasn't he? Some of you remember, I know I'm getting old here now. Some of you are scoffing at that, but others are saying, yeah, you sure are. But there was a president in my youth, kind of the coming-of-age president for me was Ronald Reagan. And he had an expression about the evil empire, the Soviet Union, in reaching out to them, making an arms agreement. Anyone know what it was? It was three words. Trust, but verify, right? And that was good. He said, well, we're going to reach out. We want to trust, but we need to verify that these agreements are actually being carried out, right? Trust, but verify. So I think this man trusted, but boy, was he eager to go home and see for himself, right? Wouldn't you be if you were him? But as he's going, he runs into one of his servants who's coming to see. Why? Because I think the son had been healed, and this servant wanted to go to him and say, hey, he's been healed. He wanted to give him the good news. So he runs into him on the way. And he says, well, when did he start to recover? As if, right? He says, well, it's about the seventh hour. What, the early afternoon? 1 o'clock in the afternoon, probably? And guess what? That was the time when Jesus had spoken the words, your son will live. But you want to know what's far more important, though, than the healing of this son? He was spared for a time from physical death, wasn't he? We'd say, well, that's good. But if that's all it was, we'd still say, well, that was a kindness on Jesus' part, a demonstration of his power. He healed this son from physical death. The fact is that young man, or boy, we don't know how old he was, he still died one day, didn't he? What's more important than any physical healing? It's spiritual healing, right? It's saving knowledge of Christ. It's deliverance from ultimate death, spiritual death. So the text tells us that this man, he believed, he trusted Jesus would heal his son. But then when he saw that his son was healed, it says what? He believed. What? He believed his son was healed? No, what? He believed in Jesus, a saving knowledge of Jesus. And it wasn't just him. Who else? His whole household believed. Boy, isn't that a much greater miracle than healing his son physically? You know what's more important than any physical miracle or physical healing is a spiritual healing. And those miracles are, that miracle is happening every day all around us, isn't it? And it's infinitely more important than any physical healing. So this man believed as well as his household. The text tells us this was the second sign that Jesus performed when he had come from Judea to Galilee. Jesus had turned the water into wine. He has turned the water of the law into the wine of the gospel. And now Jesus is the healer. He has delivered this son from death, but more importantly, he has delivered him from spiritual death, hasn't he? That young man and the father, that whole household, Jesus' power to heal is not limited by distance. He was able to do it by the power of his command. He didn't need to be there and touch him. There's another healing, though. After this, there was a feast of the Jews, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. Now, there is in Jerusalem by the Sheep Gate a pool in Aramaic called Bethesda, which has five roofed colonnades. And in these lay a multitude of invalids, blind, lame, and paralyzed. One man was there who had been an invalid for 38 years. And when Jesus saw him lying there and knew that he had already been there a long time, he said to him, "Do you want to be healed?" And the sick man answered him, "Sir, I have no one to put me into the pool when the water is stirred up, and while I am going, another steps down before me." And Jesus said to him, "Get up, take up your bed, and walk." And at once the man was healed, and he took up his bed and walked. Now that day was the Sabbath. So the Jews said to the man who had been healed, "It is the Sabbath, and it is not lawful for you to take up your bed." But he answered them, "The man who healed me, that man said to me, 'Take up your bed and walk.'" And they asked him, "Who is the man who said to you, 'Take up your bed and walk'?" Now the man who had been healed did not know who it was, for Jesus had withdrawn as there was a crowd in the place. And afterward, Jesus found him in the temple and said to him, "See, you are well. Sin no more, that nothing worse may happen to you." So Jesus heals an official son. Now we see him healing a lame man, his third sign here. This feast in Jerusalem, Jesus returned there to that. As he's going in, he sees that the entrance gate to the city, one of the entrance gates, a pool called Bethesda, which in Aramaic means house of mercy. So how appropriate is that it would be there? Many invalid people there, blind, lame, paralyzed, including this one man who'd been lame for 38 years. Now, in Sunday school, our Sunday school teachers wanted to always give us the impression this man had been lying at the pool for 38 years. I don't know, maybe he had. I'm kind of doubting it was, but he'd been an invalid for 38 years, and he'd been at the pool for a long time, however long that is, right? Now, what were all these people doing at the pool there? Well, here's a little explanation. Textual explanation. If you have a King James Bible, maybe it says right there, gives you the explanation right there, what? That an angel would come down and stir the waters of the pool, and then the first person who would get into the pool would be healed, and that's why they were there. But if you have an ESV or a New American Standard, an NIV, may have an indication that there's something, a margin note that talks about that. It's not a part of the text. And here's why. Because the text that we have very, very reliable Bible text. We do. But they didn't have Kinko's copiers back in the day, did they? And so when the text of the scriptures were written in the New Testament, they didn't go run off 100,000 copies at Kinko's and have them delivered throughout the empire. How did you get copies of things? Handwritten, right? What happens when people... When human beings enter into any kind of process, mistakes occur sometimes, right? So, if everything is being handwritten, sometimes things would get left out, sometimes things would get left in. Now, I don't want to don't let this shake your trust in the scriptures, but it's very, very reliable. If you want to study that a little more, come and talk to me. I'll give you some good resources on that. But the fact is sometimes you're going to have some texts that have a word that might be a little different, or even a little explanation passage like that, that's in some Bibles but not others. Why? Because Bibles like the King James, when those were translated, were based on the best available manuscripts that they had at the time, and it included that explanation. But since that time, there have been discoveries of even older manuscripts going back closer to the time of Jesus, closer to the time when they were written, that do not include that explanation. Meaning what? That was not in the text. So what probably happened here? There was a tradition or a belief among the Jewish people that would happen, that an angel would do that. Whether that was true or not, I don't know. But there was a belief among the Jewish people that happened. And so someone at some point probably came along and said, maybe put a little explanation in a margin or something of why people were there and why they did that. And why the man says what? I have no one to get me into the pool. But it was not a part of the original Gospel of John that was added. So that's the explanation then of why this man says, I have no one to get me into the water. So this man had been there a very long time. And once again, there's Jesus surprising us again. He's surprising us again. We would expect him to say something like, here, let me heal you, sir. But what does he do? He says to him, do you want to be healed? Why does he ask if he wants to be? Well, of course he wants to be healed. He's at this pool where people go to get healed. He's been an invalid for 38 years. But Jesus says, do you want to be healed? Why does he ask? Of course he wants to be healed, doesn't he? Why does he ask him, though? Some people don't really want to be healed, do they? Does that surprise anybody here? Some people don't really want to be healed. Why? Because they're too comfortable in their sin or in their condition or whatever it is, right? They don't really want to be healed. They're not willing to do what it might take to be healed. I think Jesus confronts that, gets the man thinking along those lines. But he says, well, yes, yes, I do, but you know, every time that water gets stirred up, somebody else beats me to the pool. But Jesus says, okay, tell you what, I'll hang out here with you. And as soon as that water gets stirred up, I'll throw you in. No. Jesus doesn't need to wait for the water to get stirred up, does he? Says what? Get up. Take up your bed, which is significant, and walk. Something else is going on here besides a physical healing. There's a message in this besides the power to physically heal. If it was only about healing, he could have said to the man, get up and walk. But he didn't say, get up and walk. He said what? Get up and do what? Take up your bed and walk. How many of you know where I'm going with this? Anybody? Why did Jesus tell him? Why did he tell him to pick up his bed and walk? And by the way, it was the Sabbath. There's a message in there, isn't there? Because who had a problem? Does God have a problem with carrying something on the Sabbath? Does God have a problem with working on the Sabbath? See, here's the truth is, God gave the Sabbath for what? As a day of rest for the people. It was out of God's mercy and kindness, he instituted the Sabbath so that people wouldn't work themselves to death. How many of you know people who are inclined to work themselves to death? So God instituted the Sabbath so that people would get that rest that they need, and it was enforced. But how many of you also know, though, human beings have a wonderful capacity to twist and distort something that was intended for good and make it into, what? Religious legalism. So God had instituted the Sabbath that people might rest and worship him. But now along come the religious legal scholars who decide, well, we've got to get more specific about this, and we've got to write all these laws about what exactly. We don't want to violate the law where we said we're not supposed to work on the Sabbath. Well, what constitutes work? Well, you know, carrying things can be kind of heavy. That can be work. So they started writing all these laws about what constitutes work on the Sabbath. And so there were very specific amounts. You were allowed to, I can't quote you the exact amount, you were allowed to carry a certain amount of weight, a certain amount of distance. But you couldn't carry more than that weight, and you couldn't carry it more than a certain distance either. Anybody surprised by the legalistic impulse in human beings, right? So there you are. So Jesus says, get up, take up your bed, and walk. Why? Because he knows that it's on the Sabbath, and it's what's it going to do? It's, well, if I may put it so bluntly, it's an in-your-face to the Pharisees, isn't it? There's a message in there. But Jesus' kindness and his healing, and it's a little bit of a message to the Pharisees, again, about their legalism. And he knows it's going to invite a conflict. Jesus isn't afraid of conflict. How many of you are afraid of conflicts? You don't like to be. How many of you relish conflicts? I'm looking at you, right? Takes all kinds in the body, and that's good. So it was not an accident that Jesus said, take up your bed and walk. Because he's ultimately going to say something about himself and about his mercy and his goodness to this man, as opposed to the law of the Pharisees. So he's confronted. Predictably enough, he's confronted. Hey, you can't do that. You can't carry that on the Sabbath. Who told you to do that? Well, the man who healed me told you to do it. Well, who is he? Well, the man didn't even know that it was Jesus, because Jesus had withdrawn. That is, Jesus was willing to stir up a little controversy here, but he knew his time, right? And he knew that this was not the time right then and there for a big confrontation with the Pharisees. He'd have those plenty, right? But he withdrew. And then what does he do? He seeks the man out. He seeks him out then. So he didn't even realize, the man didn't know who he was. And I think Jesus finds him in the temple. But then he tells him something again. More important than any physical healing is what? Spiritual healing, right? And he says to this man, what? Sin no more, that nothing worse may happen to you. Now, why did he say that to him? Well, some would say that Jesus was in that sometimes physical sickness or disability or something is a result of sin. Now, ultimately, that's true, isn't it? All sickness, all disability, everything that's wrong with our bodies and with this world, ultimately is because of sin, isn't it? But that doesn't mean that every time because you got a cold or something like that, that it was some specific sin you committed that caused it. But sometimes there may be a link there, huh? And so some would say this man was lame for some reason because of some particular sin. And that's possible. That's possible. And so Jesus is saying to him, what? Sin no more so that something worse may not happen to you. That's possible what he's saying there. But you know what I think he's really saying to him, though? I think he's more concerned about this man's soul than he is about his body. And he's telling the man, sin no more, there's something worse. What is the worst thing that may happen? Dying in your sins, forever separated from him in hell. That's the worst that may happen. It's a call to salvation. Well, so what? What do you want me to do with this? That happened a long time ago. What does it have to do with me here today? Well, I just want to remind us again that Jesus' mighty power to heal, it's not limited by distance or time. Jesus didn't need to be physically present to heal that official son. And he doesn't need to be physically present in his resurrection body right here on earth to heal people today, does it? He does it by his mighty power from the throne room of heaven, doesn't he? His mighty power is not limited by distance. And it's not limited by time. That is, it Doesn't matter that this man had been like in this condition for 38 years. That was not an obstacle for him. So there may be any number of afflictions or problems that you may have been struggling with for many, many years. That's not an obstacle for him, because his mighty power is able to heal. So I wanted to take a little time here this morning to ask, do you need healing? Is it a spiritual healing? Is it emotional healing? Is it physical healing? And I'd like us to pray for one another. Now, this is the point where the sermon gets dangerous. You see, I'm done with the preaching part. Now's the part where I'm going to make everybody uncomfortable, and I'm going to walk out here. Wait a minute. You're supposed to be up there where we can have this safe distance here. But now you're coming out here, and now I'm getting really uncomfortable because I'm looking right at you. Because someone needs healing here. Now, I'm not saying I want you to come up and we're going to pray over you and you're going to slay you in the spirit and you're going to be healed instantly. I'm not talking about that stuff, okay? What I am saying is that Jesus has mighty power to heal, doesn't he? Sometimes it's physical, but sometimes it's emotional. Sometimes it's spiritual. Sometimes it's just things that you've got going on that you just feel are impossible circumstances or odds against you. So what I want to do is actually, if there's anyone who wants prayer today, we as a church body are going to come together to pray for you right now. You know, it's been said, oh, I'll pray for you. You know what the best thing you can do when you say you're going to pray for someone is not to say, I'll pray for you, and then intending to later. Best thing you can do is pray right then and there, isn't it? So we're going to do that right now. We're going to pray right here now for someone who needs prayer. I want you to know, too, this gets recorded. It goes out onto the internet. But at this point, we are cutting it off. It's not going out there, okay? So nobody's prayer is going to be going out onto the internet for the whole world to hear. This is just between, this is us. This is our church family from here.